Alrighty. How's it going, everybody? This is Kevin from Athlete Factors, and this is podcast episode number 6, I believe. I'm here with my longtime friend, Mandy. What's up, Mandy?
How's it going?
If y'all couldn't tell, Mandy's from the South.
Can you already tell? That was quick.
Yeah.
That was quick.
So, Mandy Ray, soon to be Mandy
Para.
Nice.
Para. I may have to learn to roll the R's. I think I'm okay without it, though.
Like that?
No, I still can't do it. Yeah. Still can't do it. I'm just a Para until I can get it better.
That's all right.
We've been friends for over 10 years now. I think I was thinking about that the other day.
Wow.
Does that make you feel old?
Yes. Yeah, back in grad school. How has it been that long since grad school?
Well, not over, but right about 10.
Yeah, we started in 2009, so. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so yeah, we became quick friends at Baylor. We're working out together. We're discussing schoolwork, discussing other funny people in our classes a lot of times.
Yes.
And yeah, cracking jokes, being immature.
Always being immature.
So that was, just kind of fit right in for me because I was still am not very mature. So
nope, not ready to grow up yet. Don't think I'm gonna.
Nice. So
I'd rather stay immature.
Exactly. You've got the rest of your life to grow up. Why do it now?
Right.
So Mandy is finishing up her PhD. So Mandy, why don't you tell us a little bit about your academic background, your experience, kind of all the things that have led you up to this point where you're almost about to be Dr. Mandy.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. So it's been a really long and probably bumpy-ish road to the PhD. I did undergrad at Hardin-Simmons in Abilene, Texas. So I did exercise science there and thought from there that I wanted to be a physical therapist and ended up that my grades weren't actually good enough to be a physical therapist. And I did spend a lot of time in like the clinic and watching people and doing like physical therapy tech hours and ended up just really not liking the same repetitive stuff every day. And I had a really hard time because a lot of the people that I saw just weren't ready to get better. They didn't want to put the work in to get better. And it was really frustrating for me to watch. And so I decided to take my education from there and try to get into strength and conditioning. So I'd always liked fitness. I always liked strength training. Really liked, again, the way like the body adapted to exercise, things like that that got me interested in physical therapy at the beginning. And so I started working in the strength coach setting and stuff like that. I was a strength coach for a little while, and just the hours in that were not something that I wanted to keep up. Mm-hmm. So I ended up finishing my master's in strength and conditioning with you mm-hmm. at Baylor University. And at Baylor, we had a professor that we worked with a lot. Oh, look at you, sporting Baylor. I couldn't even tell that was a Baylor shirt.
I know. I don't like to, like, push it out there, but I still like to wear it, you know?
Yeah, I'm at KU now, and so they really don't let me support Baylor, especially Baylor basketball.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I've lost a couple of bets betting on Baylor, so
ooh.
I can't actually bet on them against KU anymore. However, we know where the loyalties are. It's all that matters. So I finished my master's and had a professor at Baylor named Darren Willoughby. So Dr. Willoughby, who we both love still. He is fantastic. He's a great mentor to both of us, I think. And he really got me into the research side of things and really loving research. So I ended up working after Baylor. I went to an internship for a little bit at OU, and I was able to work with some really, really great researchers there that are still awesome researchers. So David Fukuda, Abby Smith-Ryan, Chrissy Kendall, Trent Herta, who I work for now, and Ashley Herta, Pablo Costa, and then I work under Dr. Jeff Stout. And so just really cool people, learned a lot about research there. Dr. Stout ends up leaving OU. And so when he left, I couldn't go with him to Central Florida. So I took a break from research for a while and was able to restart my PhD 3 years ago now. So nice. I restarted under Trent Herta. And now I do mostly muscle physiology and motor unit behavior.
Ooh, that's awesome.
It's fun. It's fun. It's very basic science. So it's a pretty long bridge to walk from motor unit behavior to like the applied physiology and what we really like to talk about. Mm-hmm. But it's been really interesting, and he's making me a good researcher for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's been good.
Yeah. I remember a few times that I came to visit you while you were doing your internship there. And I think, I cannot remember the guy's name, but he was the one doing all of the blood flow restriction research.
Oh, yeah, Lenicky. Jeremy
Lenicky. Yeah. Yeah. So that was super cool to like see that literally like cutting edge. Like it was not even published yet. Like nobody had done very much in that area. And that was super cool. That was really interesting.
Yeah, and
so.
And now it's a big
it's everywhere
big deal.
Now.
There are a lot of people doing it, and so he tested some of the first cuffs that they've used in the U.S. So I was a subject for those, and there was some tough research protocols in there.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting to be kind of the first one to roll through all of that.
Yeah, I think I was a guest research subject in one of y'all's studies.
Did you?
Yeah, I think it was one of those effervescent creatine studies, but I think I did not really fit in with their actual criteria. I was a little too fit. I'm not gonna lie.
When you're still running a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that. So was that the Wingate? Did you do the Wingate testing?
It was it wasn't Wingate, it was treadmill. And I just was I was way, way up on that end of things.
Did you sandbag your VO2 max test? Is that what you did? Is that how that happened? Because I think that was like a critical velocity kind of testing.
Yeah, I think you guys were just like, hey, we can't use you for the study, but we wanna see where you compare to everybody else. And I'm like, heck yeah. I want to show everybody that I still got it. So
that
it was fun.
Sense.
Yeah.
Those are some fun studies. We did some cool stuff in there with a lot of supplementation stuff and a lot of new equipment. I really liked that. So that was more body composition and I guess sport performance kind of research. So that's kind of my wheelhouse. That's probably where I will go when I'm done with motor units is more applied stuff, more sport performance, nutrition, supplementation kind of stuff is probably my road. I likely will not stay in motor unit behavior unless somebody just really needs me in that field. I probably won't stay there.
Well, that's exciting because that's the kind of stuff that's the stuff I want to read is the applied stuff, right? So that's the stuff that keeps me interested in keeping one foot as much as possible into the research side and the other foot into, you know, kind of the in the trenches sort of side. So my goal is always to merge those two and make sure that I'm using the most up-to-date cutting edge science with the most effective, you know, best practices of, you know, the in the trenches strength coaches and sport performance coaches. So, yeah, without people like you, I can't do that very well. So,
wow, yes, I
said people stuff. Like you, not.
I know you didn't. You didn't actually mean me. I was like, oh my gosh, did he say something nice to me? What is happening? Yeah, it's tough. I think that we see a lot because we have an applied physiology lab, so we get to see some of the really cool stuff, and we're actually starting to use motor unit behavior in a lot of really cool ways. We've got somebody from another lab that's merging with ours right now that is doing dehydration, so passive dehydration.
Oh, wow.
And then looking at how that affects motor unit behavior. So I think that's going to be a really exciting study to see.
Yeah, the implications for that are going to be super interesting for combat sports, for any sort of sport where like weight is an issue. So that'll be really interesting. A lot of endurance athletes are like constantly worried about weighing too much, and they'll wait till like, you know, 2 or 3 days before race day to like make some sort of change. So it ends up being dehydration. And so that's really interesting. That's cool.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. And thankfully, I'll probably have to be a subject. So thankfully, it's passive dehydration. The last study that we did was active dehydration, and not my favorite protocol. It's not my favorite.
So what's an example of a difference between passive and active dehydration as far as the protocol goes?
So there's a lot. So the passive dehydration is just sit in a heat chamber for a given amount of time. I think they're doing up to 5% body weight.
Wow.
So a pretty significant amount of your total body water you have to sweat out during this protocol. They have some diet restrictions so that you're not eating a lot of carbohydrate heavy foods.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to eat a lot of foods that don't contain water. So more raw vegetables and lower carbohydrates so that you're not increasing glycogen storages and storing more water.
Right.
And then I think they're actually going to put them in the sauna for several hours because our just regular environmental heat chamber isn't actually getting hot enough.
Are the subjects getting compensated?
$0.
That's amazing. That's so cool. Yeah.
So it'll be mostly grad students and then, you know, some brave undergraduates that are willing to jump in there. But so
that's awesome.
Active dehydration, I did this study 2 years ago. Active dehydration in a heat chamber. So first you do a VO2 max, then they put you at a percentage of your VO2 max in the heat chamber with a rectal thermometer. That was not comfortable.
Do you want to share with everyone what that is? Or no, you don't have to.
It's a long wire backside. And then you have a little monitor that you carry around with your tail coming out that has your core temperature.
Your rectal temperature.
Core temperature, i.e. rectal temperature. you have your little monitor that they watch and make sure that your core temperature doesn't get too high. However, the worst part about that is you have that thermometer and then you're sitting on a bike seat cycling for 80 minutes.
A
heat chamber.
Wow.
So there were actually also 4 biopsies. So you did that for 3 days, 4 biopsies and 17 blood draws within that. Yeah, it was a tough protocol. So that's the difference in active and passive. Is active dehydration, you're moving. Passive dehydration, you're sedentary, obviously, and not exercising. But with the passive dehydration, we can control for things like muscle damage and stuff like that may be happening during active dehydration. You're not seeing muscle breakdown. We can take a better look at what's happening with inflammatory markers. They're going to look at TNF-alpha, things like that, to see what's going on with inflammatory cytokines as well.
Awesome.
And so hopefully we'll control for some of that and be able to see what actually is causing differences in contractions and how different fibers and motor units are behaving after dehydration.
Wow.
So,
yeah, passive sounds way better than active. That's all I have to say.
Way more comfy, right?
Yeah. I'd sign up for passive. I would not volunteer for active. I'm sorry. That's, So
I did get paid a little bit for that one. So
it probably wasn't enough.
That's what everybody says. Like, my parents went, "Do you need money? Do you need money for that one?"
Why would you do that?
That's exactly. But it's not that bad. Somebody's going to have to volunteer for mine too. So,
wow. Yeah, you gotta.
Favorite.
You're paying it forward. So that hopefully people will volunteer for yours.
We will see. We shall see.
Yes. Awesome. So Have you always been really passionate of, I mean, you mentioned that Willoughby kind of got you into it, but have you always been really passionate about diving into subjects like this, like taking a deep dive? Is this the sort of thing that like gets you up early in the morning? Because I'm sure you're in the lab, you know, before normal waking hours, before normal class hours, and you're probably staying late, you're probably working weekends. So what is it that gives you the drive and energy to continue doing that?
Man, it's just exciting stuff. I mean, when you think about, I think that you and I are big on thinking long-term about what you're doing and what you're doing healthy long-term. And I think that even from a young age, I enjoyed exercise. I enjoyed movement. I enjoyed helping other people understand all of those things. And so because it's something that I love learning more about it. You know, I love diving deeper into it every day and studying and knowing different aspects of it. So I know that long-term, I knew from a young age that long-term, the exercise is what I wanted to do. And I wanted to know as much as I could about it. And so it's taken me some time to kind of weave through and figure out, okay, what can I do for the longest amount of time? And I think that, you know, being a professor and researching and being in the lab and actually using my mind, I'm going to be able to have a career a lot longer than I would if I were just a strength coach or just a, you know, a personal trainer. I've spent a lot of years as a manager for Lifetime Fitnesses. And I loved it. I loved the people that I worked with. I loved the knowledge. I loved the company. There's so much I loved about that job, but the stress load that came with it, the hours that came with it, the physical demands on my body, I knew I couldn't do that for long term. So, so I knew that I had to, you know, figure out, you know, better ways to take care of my body emotionally and mentally and physically, and then continue to do what I love to do. So really, research was a great way to really stay involved in it. And I can teach for a long time. You know, we have some guys on staff that are in their 80s, you know, early 80s. Wow. That are still teaching and doing a great job. And they do a little bit of research, but they're still impacting young people. They're still teaching about exercise. They're still current on, you know, the literature. And, you know, it's just a neat place that, like I said, you can do forever. And so I think I love that. And then I also love just helping people understand their body, how their body works, how they're going to be healthy long term, and then finding new ways and discovering new ways to help people to get involved with their own health and stuff like that. So I think it's multifaceted of why I get up in the morning. During grad school, you really have to remember that, though. I think you have to continually remember your why, continually remind yourself of like, why am I doing this stuff?
For sure.
Why am I still doing it?
Yeah.
It becomes a definite, like a grind, a definite grind during grad school. We're close to the end.
Yeah, very close, very close. So that's a perfect segue. So tell us about the process of completing your PhD, and tell us kind of, tell us what that's like in as much detail as you feel comfortable sharing. Cause it's not just like going to class and then you do that for, you know, 3 to 5 years and then poof, you're done. So share with us a little bit about that, please.
So PhD is, so for me, I did my master's at Baylor. I had some credits from OU that I brought in with me, and then I'm finishing up here at KU. So there's a certain amount of hours that you need academically to graduate. Every school is different. I don't remember what ours is. I believe it's like 30, no, it's 40 something. Anyway, a lot of hours. And then, so I'm finished with classwork at this point. I don't have to take any more actual academic classes. I am just responsible for my dissertation now. So it's been, like I said, it's been a grind. So we're responsible. Our lab and my mentor is Trent Herta. He's very research driven. And he's very productivity driven, which is why I came to work for him. I knew that he was going to push me. I knew that he was going to be rigorous. I knew that it wasn't going to be easy, but I knew that I would come out a good researcher. And so he requires us to be in the lab at least 8 to 5 every day, only working on research. So our main goal, 8 to 5, is only research. And so then we have responsibilities for teaching, responsibilities for classwork and things like that, that we have to accomplish outside of 8 to 5. So 8 to 5 dedicated, post 5 is now work that you have to do for that stuff that you barely get paid for. They pay you, but just enough to keep you alive. So I do TA work, so all my grading, all my lesson planning, stuff like that is done before 8 or after 5. And then weekends, too, are spent, you know, creating graphs and updating papers and things like that to help submit papers. And that's our main goal, and that's Trent's main goal for us, is production. So write, collect, do it again. Collect as much as you can, then pull that data, analyze it, and start writing for another paper. And then we have an interesting way that they do graduation, or that they do they award you your PhD at KU. I think it's a European model, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know how as much of how other places do it, but we have one paper that we defend, and so you have to collect all this data over the first 3 years, and I guess I have 3 right now that are in review. And one of those 3 is one that I use for my comprehensive exams. And so comprehensive exams, you defend that paper. So you break it apart, you explain it to a committee of several professors. You talk about it, and then they question you over it. So they spend some time intensively diving into that paper. Why did you do this? What does that tell? Does this actually contribute to the literature in a positive way? Is this novel? Stuff like that. So they question you, and that's your comprehensive exam, your oral exam. So after that, they say yes or no, you get to move on. And you, after that, you propose your dissertation to them. So your dissertation is three separate papers that you will
send
after that. So I'll start that dissertation process and just propose to them, and I'll start that data collection immediately now for my last year. And so I'll defend those 3 papers at the end, and then at the end of that, they'll say, here's your PhD, or nah, try again.
Wow. I think people have no idea what it means to defend. Like, you're essentially in the specific topic that you've chosen to research and study, you're basically the world's expert in that specific topic. So when you're defending, it's people who have done a ton of research and who are probably, in theory at least, smarter than you, who are trying to rip your work to shreds and question you. Exactly. Yes, because they want to be able to put their stamp of approval on you and your ability to conduct research and your ability to evaluate it and to do all of that. So it's not just that they're asking you like, oh, okay, yeah, this is really nice. Like, why did you pick 12 subjects instead of 11 subjects? No, they're like trying to make sure that your mettle is legit, right? They're trying to put a bunch of not necessarily roadblocks in your way, but they're trying to make sure that you know how to answer these questions. And so they're trying to ask you extremely difficult questions so they can tell if you actually know your stuff or not. So it's I don't think people understand that quite a bit. So I think talking about that a little bit, like when we had comps at Baylor, we didn't really have to do any, if you passed the written portion, then you didn't have to do any oral defense.
Right.
So, but those were just like questions from all of our different classes. We didn't have to defend any, you know, any research that we had done. So PhD level is completely different than master's degree level. So,
it is. And I think different disciplines have different ways of conducting their comprehensive exams. You know, things like maybe psychology and stuff like that are completely different the way that they're set up. And mm-hmm. I think that people, or maybe even like the School of Education, sets up their comprehensive exams very differently than this. And I think because we're in such a scientific intensive program, it just, you know, they really, really try hard. And some of the best minds in science were in my room. I had Dr. Andy Fry in my comps defense. And, you know, I loved having him. He was just there for support rather than to actually question me. But it was nice, you know, nice to have him there. But some of these great, you know, people that have been researching forever, great minds in exercise science research were there. And they're, you know, first of all, you're nervous because what are they going to ask me? The second of all, like, are they going to ask me something that I'm not going to know? And then, you know, this is 10 years, the culmination of 10 years of work. And are they going to say, like, yeah, we don't feel comfortable graduating you at this point?
Oh, so, yeah, that's very scary. Very, very stressful. I can imagine. I remember having a conversation with a couple of the PhD students when we were at Baylor, and they were talking about how they were planning on taking like beta blockers and stuff like that when they defended just to bring down their heart rate a little bit and not be quite as anxious. And I was like, man, I can't imagine having to think about that level of stress to be like, okay, in order for me to do this, because like the rest of my life is kind of riding on it, I'm going to have to figure out how to get some beta blockers. Like, I was like,
I gotta chill myself out.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, the pressure is on at that point. Like the stress is real. So
yeah, it was definitely real. I slept so hard this week. I actually defended on Monday. So I was done and stress rode for a few more days. It stayed pretty high, but finally this weekend I was like, oh my gosh, I remember what being rested feels like. So
yeah, I was ready for a nap after we all finished comps. I can't imagine having to defend that way though. So what are some of the things that you really like about the academic side of ex-phys or research? What are things that you really like, and what are some things that you are not a huge fan of?
It's a tough question. So the things that I really like are, I love the science end of it. And I think that it's not, there's so much about exercise science that everyone who feels like they've exercised before or feels like they've lost weight before or whatever thinks that they're an expert right now. And it's kind of an expert epidemic. And I think that's my biggest frustration with it. So we've got that going on already that, you know,
well,
I recycle a few times. Anybody
can start a podcast and claim to be an expert. So, and bring on guests to talk about research. So, yeah. And like anybody can have an Instagram page and like be Insta famous. So I think,
give absolutely false information and make people believe it. And it's hard for me. So I say, you know, I use the teeth brushing analogy all the time, but my newest one is like, I recycle. So I'm obviously an ecologist. So yeah, you should ask me about greenhouse gases because I know. So I don't know. It's just frustrating. So there's a frustrating portion, but also exercise science right now, like our exercise science department is housed within the School of Education. And as we know, education does not have any money. So I just don't have money to do research. And I think that's the hardest thing. You know, I can write grants and I can, you know, spend a lot of extra time digging up money in different places, but it's just not funded to the level it needs to be. You know, if I called myself bioelectrical engineering, which is exactly what I am at this point, right? My defense was over pretty much electrical engineering. Your body, right, is run by almost electricity. So I do this with electricity from my brain to my muscle. And I measure the amount of electricity that is being, the amplitude of that electricity that results in the contraction. So I'm bioelectrical engineering pretty much. But if I were housed within bioelectrical engineering, Mama would have some money. Because I'm in the School of Education, we just don't have any. So I think that's my biggest frustration, is just that the funding isn't there where it needs to be. It's a health science the life science, but it is not funded that way. So, so maybe I guess that's two frustrations. What I love about it is that it's applicable to every single individual on earth, right? Like, you can take this, you can take it to your parents, you can take it to your kids, you can take it to anybody and help them and directly apply it to them on some level. Whereas if I were studying astrophysics, you know, the study of, you know, gases on Jupiter or whatever, I can't, it's really hard to build that bridge, right? Mm-hmm. To get to like, well, how does that impact me?
Right.
So that's what makes me excited about exercise sciences versus kind of some of the frustrations with it.
Gotcha. Well, that's very interesting. Yeah, it can be really difficult to work in a field where people who have absolutely no education or practical experience are all of a sudden influencers, and people are like, okay, well, this guy's got a rockin' bad. So obviously he knows things that these people over here who actually went to school for it must not know. So yeah. Instead of asking them, what is the actual scientific theory behind these claims? It's, I want to look like that guy. So,
or that girl.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Where do I give you my money? And then,
yeah.
So that can be extremely frustrating. So, the good part about that is there is a silver lining. You know, we have the opportunity to stand out against people like that in the industry and say, you know what? That's baloney. And here's why. So
you're wrong.
Exactly. But even that, like, that's super frustrating. I know guys like Lane Norton, and I believe I saw a couple posts by Jeremy Lineke a couple years ago where he was just like calling out those waist trainers.
Yeah.
And so he was funny. Like, and yeah.
The rap, too.
Yes.
He really liked calling those out.
That was it. So I saw like posts that he was doing. I forgot if it was on Facebook or whatever, but he was like calling these companies out saying, this claim is false, and here's all the research why. This claim is absolutely ridiculous, and you should never say it because it contradicts your original claim. So you're like contradicting yourself, and there's all this baloney, and it's just buzzwords. And but to do that all the time is exhausting, I'm sure. And then it takes
a job.
Exactly. So I totally understand kind of the frustration that other people in the industry have with that, because it's like, man, like, if you take all your time to point out everything that people are doing that's incorrect, then people are going to be like, wow, you're just like, to steal a line from
angry.
Yeah, exactly, to steal a line from South Park, why are you so jelly, like, so
yeah. Well, yeah, that, so if you're willing to post pictures of yourself mostly naked online, obviously you're an exercise scientist.
Yes.
But I just can't get on board with that either. So, it's a tough industry, but I think it's an important industry, and it's important that people like you are speaking up and, you know, making an impact and making a difference, and starting to disseminate truth from, you know, posers. So I'm excited that you're doing this, and I'm excited hopefully to join you at some point once I get this PhD thing off the plate, to help you out, because it's a frustrating thing to watch, and I'm glad that you're not standing on the sidelines just complaining about it, that you're jumping in and starting to cause, help people get into conversation about it, and in a very kind and polite way, directing people to truth instead of just being a, you know, a troll or jumping in and just being a dirtbag and yelling
negative
at people.
Negative Nancy?
Yeah, I mean, dirtbag, negative Nancy, either way. I'm just glad that you're being a voice of truth in so much confusion.
Yeah, well, right out of college and grad school, I was not comfortable doing that. Like, it took me, you know, quite a while. So it took a lot of reps, if you will, explaining things to one person at a time to make sure that I understood it. And when they would ask questions, if I didn't know it, you know, then going back to the research, going back to the data, figuring out the answers, and then coming back. And then eventually it was like, okay, well, you know, maybe I should write some of this stuff down. Maybe I should write some articles. Maybe I should do that. And then I was like, oh, maybe I'll write a book. And so I did that. And then, you know, things kept going. And then, I was like, oh, maybe I'll write another book. So I have two books that like no one's read, which is amazing. But
hey, except for me, I've read a few pages. So,
well, there you go. That's more than most. So, okay. But even that, like,
good stuff.
I think so. It helps me clarify my thoughts and get it into a way that I can then communicate that on a much larger scale. Like, I can talk to a group of people about nutrition and feel much more confident and comfortable doing that. Before, it was like, I don't want to talk to a group, but I'll talk to one person. So
yeah.
It's taken a while, but I'm still a work in progress for sure. And that's why I need people, you know, coming onto the podcast to share their areas of expertise and experience and, teach me some stuff. And hopefully then I can take some of that and break it down and share that with, you know, everybody who's watching or listening. So,
that's awesome. Loving it.
So, alrighty. So what, if you don't mind, what is your topic for your dissertation? What are you going to be studying?
Man, I love talking about my topic of dissertation with dudes especially. So buckle up because it's about to get a little uncomfy. It's gonna be awesome. It's especially cool in the society that we're in right now. So first of all, like, I'll tell you what my comps project was. Mm-hmm. And that was the validity and reliability of the precision decomposition 3 algorithm, which is the sensor and the decomposition algorithm that we use to look at motor unit behavior on the muscle. So it's the surface of the skin EMG sensor that breaks down that EMG, so that squiggly line, right, that you see, mm-hmm. into individual waveforms. And we can tell the amplitude. So was it small? Was it large? Small mm-hmm. amplitude. Typically correlate with type 1 muscle fibers. Large amplitudes typically correlate with type 2 muscle fibers, right? The higher force
mm-hmm.
muscle fibers. The stuff that's recruited at very high intensity contractions, heavy squats, max effort vertical jump,
mm-hmm.
Plyometrics, stuff like that. Those small motor units are those type 1 fibers we normally use in like long distance running, postural
aerobic,
stuff like that. So kind of just a little background on that. So now, building on top of that somewhat, I started noticing in my data that there was a strong difference in males and females in these contraction intensities. So now my next, my project for my dissertation is going to be sexually differences in males and females at a low intensity and high intensity contraction. And then during a fatiguing contraction as well. So and then the last one is going to be differences in females throughout the menstrual cycle.
Wow.
So some really cool stuff. So what I noticed preliminarily is that at a low contraction intensity, so like 10% of your max effort, right? Low contraction, males and females are about the same. So at low effort levels. High effort levels, when we get upwards of like 70% maximal intensity. And I'm looking at this through isometric muscle actions of the leg extensors. All right, so at high contraction intensity, males have larger amplitudes in the higher contraction intensities than females. So meaning that males probably, well, we know males have more type 2 fiber area than females, right? And their muscle sizes are bigger, right? Obviously. So here's what I'm saying.
Is that obvious, though?
Yes,
a lot of people would argue with that, Mandy. I'm not one of them, but a lot of people would.
Well, so we actually have data on that too. We have sex differences in males and females of sedentary males and females. And what we found is that these very sedentary people, the males and females had very similar muscle sizes and very similar action to amplitude. Now you take trained males and females who both train at high intensity, have been training for years on end, things like that. Now we look at differences at their same contraction intensity. So I do my max effort at 70%, and then I do a tracing at 70%. You do your max effort and then do a tracing at 70% of that. Your action potential amplitudes are going to be higher, going to be larger than mine. Just because of, so here's the cool thing is I can say men are stronger than females. Well, we're stronger, physiologically stronger, right?
Andy.
It's a physiological fact. That is what is physiologically, if you train and I train, you're going to be stronger than me because you have more type 2 muscle fiber area because you can recruit more higher threshold motor units. And I probably has to do with testosterone. And I actually have some data collected on that. And I would love to see if testosterone correlates with those higher threshold motor units. So I've got all the blood, got all the data. I've actually got force plate data of them jumping too. So I'm excited to dig into that. Maybe I'll take that for to my next position, but I think that would be cool.
Yeah, that's but, really interesting. Yeah.
And then see if there's some theories out there that females are stronger at different parts of the menstrual cycle. I'm going to test that and see if it's achievable.
Gotcha. Yeah, I first was kind of introduced to that idea a couple years back at the ISSN National Conference when they had it here in Austin. And Dr. Sims, I cannot think of her first name, but she is like the expert on female hydration and performance throughout the menstrual cycle. And like, I just sat there and listened to her talk for like an hour and I was like, I don't understand any of this. This is crazy. Yeah. And she's just like, we have to know this because the assumption is like, if, like the assumption might be like, you have to schedule all of your competitions. Like, I think she was working mostly with like CrossFit athletes and maybe not mostly, but the case studies that she was explaining were on CrossFit and then endurance athletes. And yeah. I think up until that point, they were scheduling their competitions and races around certain times in their menstrual cycle, which were actually not beneficial.
Yeah.
But the assumption was like, okay, well, this is the best time. And so I thought that was super interesting. I still follow her on Instagram. I was trying to look her up so I could just now, just so I could find her name, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah, there's a lot of Sandra, Dr. Sandra Hunter has a lot of stuff on that. She does a really great job of describing menstrual cycle and contraction differences in males and females as well. Her stuff's a lot on fatigue and motor unit behavior and during fatigue and stuff. Mm-hmm. She's a good one. But, you know, for the most part, I just did a full literature review on this. And what we know really right now is that estrogen affects a motor neuron. And there, it inhibits it in different ways. And so it depends on what portion of your cycle you have a high estrogen content and a low estrogen content. And so that's really going to affect the motor neuron in different ways. Hi, buddy. Thank you. That's so sweet. I just got a kiss.
How nice.
<stand it>. So sweet.
That's incredible.
I love it. I know.
So,
we don't know enough about it. And, you know, even my mentor, like I'll start talking about it and telling him what I want to do. And he's just like, I don't know. Nobody really knows. So go do it.
Yeah. Go find it out. And
so right now I feel like I keep saying that I'm a menstruation expert.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's so very important.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions about your cycle particularly?
I can't think of any right now, but I appreciate you offering to answer them. If I ever have any, best believe you will be the first person I ask. What's super interesting with all that is I try to follow politics a little bit. I try to follow just like cultural trends. And because I care about academia, I hear fairly often in the news things about especially in departments like education or the less STEM-related fields of study, I guess. So if it's kind of outside the realm of science, then especially hard science, then the trending theory is that there are no differences between men and women. So it's, when I hear that, I'm like, is this for real? Like, do people actually think that, or is it like within a specific realm of study that they're talking about, like in this specific thing, there are no differences? Because for sure that could be the case, but because all I've known from a very young age is, has been athletics, I'm like,
right.
Have these people never like run before? Have they never competed in a sport before and seen that there are distinct differences? Yes, there's a ton of overlap. And like, so I follow this, this lady on Instagram. I can't remember it. I'm awful with names, but like, this chick is jacked. Okay. She is so strong. Okay. She's a physical therapist, and I will never in my life be able to lift remotely close to any of the weight that she lifts. Like, I just, I watch her deadlift and I'm like,
that's amazing.
I wish I could do that. Like, I honestly do. I'll never be able to do that. But I am fairly confident that there's very few women who could beat me in an 800 in a half mile. Like, right. Now it's different because I don't run, but like when I was at my best, there were very, very few. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and I wasn't even that great at the half mile. So that's the thing.
Oh, come on. Don't be humble.
I mean, I was not like world class. Let's put it that way. I was dece.
Pretty dang bad, so.
I mean, I was good, not great.
Whatever.
So it's things like that, that I'm, that doesn't mean that that whole idea does not relate to value. It doesn't relate to your worth as a human being. It just, there are differences. And when we understand those differences, then everybody progresses. Everybody does better. So yeah. I think that's super important to learn.
It is. And I think that might be it. Like, I could talk about this topic for an hour in itself. Like, there's just so many things and so many things that doing this research I'm having to learn, because, you know, especially politically and stuff like that, things like, you know, when I do a research study, should I actually ask somebody now, what are your chromosomes? Are you XY or are you XX?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I don't care what you, I don't care what you identify as. Like, I can identify as whatever I'd like to, and that's okay. That's gender, right? You can identify as whatever gender, and that's okay. I accept you. I love you. You can be what you want to be. That's fine. But as a scientist, I want to test your physiology, and to test your physiology doesn't, what you feel like in here doesn't matter what's expressed in your genetics. So when you have transgender, you have all of those sorts of things that are, again, those are biological, and that's a completely different thing. And the number or percentage of the population that has that, very small.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as we get into academics and have to look more at stuff like that, it really gets tricky.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I am a woman. I identify as a woman. My genetic makeup says that I'm a woman. And there are things that I get to do that you can't do. I get to have babies, right? You
don't
get to. Sorry. No matter how much you try, no matter how much you want to, you don't get to grow a baby inside you and have it. You get to do a lot of other cool things too. You're physiologically stronger than me. Good for you.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't make you better than me. I get to have babies.
Exactly.
It doesn't make me better
than me. Well, no. It's kind of a superpower. Like that's kind of a big deal. Yeah.
So, and again, this is my opinion from, you know, living as a woman for 34 years of my life.
I don't know how old you are.
you can ballpark it. You just don't want to know. you would have to math it because I'm a few years older than you. So, you know, living that way, that's my perspective. That's my channel. I'm tuned into that, and that's how I feel. There are other people that feel differently. Totally respect that. But again, we have to think of it from a scientific point of view and not a psychological point of view. That's a totally different realm. So, yeah, I could talk on this for hours, probably.
Yeah.
And it could get messy. That would be something that would be interesting to have someone with a different viewpoint on to visit about, too, because I think we probably agree on it mostly.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I love having discussions like this with people that I like. I'm planning on having a guy come on and talk about things that I literally don't know anything about, which relate to being able to access nutrients from specific seeds and nuts. And so, like, if you don't sprout them, then you're missing out on certain nutrients, or your body is going to have issues absorbing certain nutrients, something like that. It's stuff that I don't know. So I want to bring him on so I can, you know, so I can ask him about it, because I literally don't know.
Yeah.
But then I'm also planning on bringing on someone who has a very, very opposing end of the spectrum viewpoint on that topic. And I'm excited. Exactly. Like, I'm not a huge fan of debate in this setting. Like, I love debate. I love it. This, I just want to learn as much as possible. So I don't want like shouting matches. So I don't plan on doing any sort of debating here where I bring on multiple people and say, okay, ready, fight, that sort of thing.
Right. But that's just not your style too. Like, you're not somebody that would enjoy that at all.
No.
That would make you highly, highly uncomfortable.
Uncomfy. Not comfy.
Not comfy. Exactly. Still not comfy.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
you wanted to be friends, okay?
Yeah. For the most part, that's true. So
yeah,
so we'll transition a little bit here.
Okay. I'm starting to lose battery, so I may have to start wrapping up quick.
Okay. All right. So let's
I don't see an outlet for me.
Awesome. So how can everyone understand research better? Just in like 10 seconds or less. Go.
Understand research better. I think that getting with a friend and or someone who knows research and going over articles, like find a, you know, a small community that you can do research articles together. That might even be something cool that you do is we do this in my classes. So the classes that I teach, I'll bring a research article to them, or I'll have send it home with them, say, read this, go over it, and then let's come back. And so it's usually an article that that you wouldn't think the outcome, you could spin it. And so what I would do is I take that research and I spin it in bro science terms. So I'm like, based on this article, I should never have branched chain amino acids, right? They're not good for you.
Yes.
Right?
And yes.
Like, yeah, this is true. This article says branched chain amino acids suck. You should never have it. I'm like, or, you know, I'm an equal opportunity employer. So like, yeah, that's that. This says the branched chain amino acids suck. So I wanted to go do and girls with that. Anyway, then I'm like, actually, that's wrong. Let's look at the research design. So then we dig into the research design. Then we dig into the outcomes and the p-values. And then we find that, you know, that it wasn't an appropriate training intervention to elicit a response. What? Yeah. So you're telling me that an article that was peer-reviewed and so on and so forth didn't have a good research design? Yeah, I am. Because I don't know who reviewed it. Hopefully, you know, somebody good. But somebody could have let their grad students review it or something like that. So there are research articles out there with not great research, not great publication ethics, stuff like that we have to keep in mind. So break them down with somebody that knows about research and understands the research process, and then read it several times before you start to formulate your own hypothesis. And then remember what the conclusions say or what the statistics say are the answer. Don't try to broaden it.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, keep it within the scope of what the researchers say.
That was more than 10 seconds, but
no, that was good. That was good. So just in case we lose you here, how can people find you? How can they follow you? How can they reach out to you if they have any research-related questions?
Easiest way to find me is probably on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. My Instagram is starting to transition into less personal stuff right now. It's pretty good. Pretty good mix of personal and educational stuff. And it's Iron Lily, IRON_LILY. Is my Instagram handle. So that's probably the easiest. You're fine.
So that's so cute. An Iron Lily.
Iron Lily. Yes, it is.
Awesome. So what is a piece of advice or a quote or something that you consider extremely important that everyone needs to hear who's listening?
There's several. I have several different, depending on different phases of your life. So one of them I like right now that I think about a lot is just fight, grind, repeat, fight, grind, repeat. So it's just, I know that it's for a short amount of time. I see the light at the end of the tunnel. I know what I want and I'm going to go get it. So just fight, grind, repeat over and over and over. So I think about that a lot when things get hard and when I hate, you know, getting up and going to work and working for someone else for another day and doing someone else's research and, mm-hmm. you know, doing a lot of things that are not ideal and I don't want to do. I know there's a means to it. I know there's a purpose for it. So fight, grind, repeat. Outside of that, I think that you have to be careful listening and looking at other people. So I think when I look at people who are trying to diet or lose weight or, you know, get stronger or do whatever, they're looking at a certain person for an intervention or for a diet or for whatever it is. I want them to ask a question like, what are you going to do when that's over? Mm. So like, I'm going to do keto and I want to lose all this weight. Like, cool. What are you going to do? What about when keto's over?
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. what's next?
Yeah. So yeah. How long are you going to do that? Yeah. Is this a 6 weeks thing? Is this a 6 months thing? Are you going to be able to, you know, do this the rest of your life?
Right. And then what's that going to do to you mentally, emotionally, and physically? Not just, am I going to lose the weight, but am I also going to be a good person? Am I going to be a good mom or dad? Am I going to, you know, be able to be at my brother's wedding or, you know, whatever it may be? Like, is this sustainable long-term for a healthy person inside and out? So that's one of my favorites too.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this, Mandy. I really appreciate it. I'm sure that everyone who watched or listened learned a couple things and has gained a little bit more respect for people who get their PhD and people who conduct research. So, yeah, good luck on this next year, finishing everything up. And
I appreciate this too. Appreciate what you're doing. And like I said, getting the knowledge out, talking to people. Like, you're doing a really good job. I'm proud of you. Proud of you.
That's makes me feel good. Awesome. Alrighty. Thanks everybody for watching and listening. And stay tuned for our next episode. And hopefully in the future we'll have Mandy back to discuss a lot more things. Perhaps including dietary restriction and a lot more stuff related to dietary programming, counting your calories, tracking your macros, things like that. I know you've been doing that since before I knew anything about it. I think you introduced me to it. So
coaching a lot of people on it.
Yes.
So hopefully I'll be getting into that a lot more, but I'd love to come back and talk about that more with you too.
Awesome. Awesome. All righty, y'all. Take care and have a good one.
Keep up the good work. Bye now.